Hello and welcome back to Reality TV. It's me, Jody, and today I will be giving you a scene-by-scene breakdown of 90 Day Fiancé and Teen Mom 2, which happen to be two of my most favorite shows ever. I mean, talk about that David and Annie this week. Yikes. But first, I know it's your favorite part of the show. It's the time when I tell you that you must come join me on patreon.com/realitybpod. You get to hear the weekly episodes posted there first before they hit your regular feed. You get access to our super secret Facebook group. And also, I mean, the most important thing, my never-ending love and devotion to you personally. And also, make sure you follow me on Instagram and Twitter, where I'm posting all the funniest screenshots that I grab from all the shows throughout the week. That's at RealityTVPod everywhere. Lastly, a little heads up that next week's schedule is going to be a little bit different. I will only be recapping 90 Day Fiancé because the Grizz Huffs are going to Disney World. You're going to have to send me some Xanax, probably an extra charger, because it's going to be a long drive. We're going from here to Disney World, and I'm going to try to use this time to focus my energy on binging Southern Charm from the very first season. So anything else, in case I blast through those pretty quickly, send it my way, whatever my Wi-Fi or hotspot's going to handle. And I know you're going to make a joke about my hotspot. I don't have one. I'm an elderly, soon-to-be 38-year-old. You nasty, nasty pervert. Just kidding. The perverts are reserved for our favorite show, 90 Day Fiancé, which is the perfect transition. And this week, I'm going to mix it up. I know, I mean, have I had too much caffeine this morning? What's going on? But I'm going to be talking about Nicole first because she was nothing short of amazing. Now, we pick up where we left off with Nicole doing that baby talk thing to Azin, where she's asking, what happened? And she's got this pouty face where her eyes have recessed into her cheeks. And I think this is the face that she thinks Azin thinks is cute. I think maybe he just tells her that because he can just imagine her face like it resembles a nice flatbread or a falafel. Not like he's looking into the eyes of a truly deranged person. Now, she also keeps flapping the phone around. It was driving me crazy. You know, on FaceTime, probably like when you talk to, your parents or a child under the age of 4, where they don't know how to hold the phone, all you see is their forehead. That's what she's doing. Now, I'm thinking this might be what Nicole did prior to first seeing Azin in person, which is why he was so surprised when he saw that she was big a little bit when she first got to Morocco. But in the end, Azin said that he didn't receive an answer from the immigration visa office because he still needs some kind of witness paper. Bullshit. Excuse me, I had to clear my throat there. Now, her mom, Robbily, I know I was calling her Bobby last week, but, you know, Robbily, Bobbily, tomato, tomato. She's yelling at Nicole's big old head that Azin is scamming her and she's being too stupid to see it. Again, this is her mom saying it, not me. Now, Nicole has no defense or reasons to legitimize this crazy belief that Azin even tolerates her, let alone wants to marry her. So she just starts rubbing her greasy, dirty hands over her dirty face. If she would just use the same aggressive maneuver to just jump in the shower, at least spray on some dry shampoo, I'd give the girl a break. But until then, Nicole will forever and always be my number one to snark on this series. Now, fast forward several days, and the fourth wall is broken. Wow. Now, producers are on the scene in the hole. That's what I'm just going to refer to Nicole's apart motel from now on, because after a zoom in on her phone, I got an aerial view of her carpet. And I need a new prescription for my glasses because my corneas just about spontaneously erupted. Save your tears for my eyesight, though, and instead shed a tear for Nicole because she's got this email from Azin's visa place saying that it was refused. And somehow she's truly shocked. She doesn't understand how he could be refused. Now, for those of us who have followed this case like it was our job. We know it's because he's been pulling this shit with other girls from other countries. And duh, he doesn't want to marry her. We all know that, okay? Now, you know what really struck me as scary, though? Besides the fact that Nicole doesn't see this whole massive years-long scam. The camera starts panning around as she's crying, saying she doesn't know how she's going to survive not seeing him. It's been 10 months already. And besides the, you know, disgusting filth and hoard around her, Nicole has these creepy altars to Azen. It's very Kathy Bates in Misery, if you catch my drift. Now, thank God Robbie shows up, because I can only imagine the anger Nicole could take out on May if she's left alone with her. And Robbie damn near does the splits when Nicole says Azen got denied a visa. She tries to be sympathetic. I mean, she comforts Nicole like a good mom should, but you know she went home and she took out her very best box of wine to celebrate. She thinks like all of us do. Either Azen's a scammer or he sabotaged the interview because he has no intention to ever come to the U.S. to marry Nicole. He just wants to prolong the gravy train. And you know, I purposely chose those words because if a truer phrase ever existed, I don't know of it. Now, we are just going to go full steam ahead and we are going to meet up with David and Annie. David is pulling his soon-to-be repoed car into that motherfucking firehouse. No license plate and likely no registration or insurance because it's David. Now, turns out David's son, Jacob, is now moving into the firehouse, and David sees this as completely fine. He says, although he hasn't found a job and Chris promised to get him on his feet, but, you know, he's not going to send him money any longer because, you see, it's all Chris's fault that David is a fucking loser with no motivation and an entitlement issue that truly is like anything we've ever seen before. And we watch Teen Mom religiously. That's saying a lot. David is such a saint, though. I mean, is he not? His son Jacob is moving into his rent-free firehouse. Well, I mean, it's not really rent-free because David hasn't been paying the $1,000 rent that Chris is asking for. David thinks it's crazy that Chris would ask to pay for things that, you know, he uses. He says he's struggling to survive, and that's why he can't pay rent. But, you know, those lovely lady lumps and womanly hips he has have grown in size, so he has surely enough money to be eating quite handsomely. Now, nevertheless, David proceeds to paint himself as a victim. Interesting that he thinks it's okay to charge his son Jacob rent, but he doesn't think that he should have to pay rent to Chris. What a slimy piece of garbage. And not that I ever particularly liked Annie before, but she sure raised her bitch flag high and proud this episode. Now, Jacob walks in and Annie doesn't even turn to say hello or look at him. But then she says Jacob doesn't talk to her. Maybe he doesn't talk to you because you acted like a stuck-up bitch to him, Annie. At this point, I think Annie and David totally deserve each other because David pulls his typical manipulative bullshit and says to Annie, oh, yes, that's my fault. I should have told you that he was going to move in. I know this is beating a dead horse, but you know what? This is my podcast and this is David's protocol. He just plans to disappoint people in order to serve himself best. But then he just throws out a useless apology later and he thinks that's sufficient enough. So Annie's revenge to David is to refuse to have sex with him while Jacob is there. Now, to be honest, I'm actually completely shocked that they were having sex at all. With a clinical diagnosis from me of having a reabsorbed penis, I didn't think it was even possible for David to have sex. I mean, it's not like you can just turn a jumbo marshmallow into a Slim Jim, if you know what I'm saying. So let's fast forward a few days, and David is now sitting down clipping coupons. Okay, it's obvious this is the first and last time David has ever done this. He's such a typical fraud. If he's truly walking around with no clothes on, like Annie says, she wouldn't be eating anything because she'd be throwing up, easiest way to save money on groceries right there. But let's screw the grocery issue altogether, because what the real issue is that Annie is just as big of a selfish monster as David is. She's acting like she's being put out by Jacob staying with them. Again, you know, in the home that she herself doesn't even pay for. But wasn't she living in a home without electricity, sleeping on a cold floor in Thailand? Wasn't she herself living at home with her parents until she moved here? Yeah, not hypocritical at all. You know, she's all about family, her family, and she's all about David following through on the dowry and respecting her family rules. But she's talking shit about David's daughter, Ashley, saying she breeds like a rabbit. Yeah, says the woman who worked in the sex industry. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a shameful thing. I'm just pointing out that it's a hypocritical thing of Annie to say if she herself was doing what she was doing. Now, let's move on to Pedro and Chantel. Friggin' River. You guys, that ugly ass, wimpy boy in his stupid sideshow bob head with the Jeffrey Dahmer glasses, who's throwing shade, as Chantel would slow talk call it, as they drive to their brother-sister date at a diner, which, I mean, where do we even go? This family is not good with things like words or speaking or common sense or decency. So here's the deal. River is a giant, spoiled baby and a massive asshole. So Pedro doesn't like hanging around him because he's a dick to him. But River, being River, likes to twist things around because he was raised by the same monsters that created Chantel. So he's pouting that Chantel should come over and play more often with them. Ugh, here is the messed up thing with River and family Chantel. They say they want this trip to this cabin in the mountains to be a bonding thing, but they want so badly to have a blowout fight with Pedro. So they're just setting him up. It is so obvious to anyone watching, and they're too stupid to see that we see how stupid they are. God, I feel stupid even just trying to explain that. Now, fast forward to Pedro and Chantel's boobs at the gym. Chantel, I mean, there's no other way to say it, and I say it a million times every episode. Chantel is just a total moron. She wants Pedro to spend not one, not two, not three, but four fucking days with her family, who have been nothing but absolutely terrible to him. She's just as vapid as Brother River because she sees this as Pedro not putting in an effort. No, Chantel. He just doesn't want to be treated like shit for 4 days. How about you go tell your family that they need to be respectful? This girl is just too immature to be married. Family Chantel, I think, is just one of those weird families that is too close. Like, you know, they encourage family sleepovers with River and Chantel sleeping in the same bed as them. Can you see it? Like, mommy, daddy, kids sleepover, all in the same bed. And then they have to like sit on mommy and daddy's laps at the restaurant. I just, you know what I'm saying. Now, I'm trying to find a reason why Pedro would be in the wrong so I can, you know, be very diplomatic and see this from both sides. But I just can't. He is just way too good for Chantel. What the hell he sees in her besides two gigantic boobs? Someone tell me. Now, fast forward again, beep, beep. That family pulls up in that motherfucking minivan. Trademark that. Now, I've never been more scared and alarmed by a vehicle since I saw someone dressed as Pennywise driving a Mini Cooper last Halloween. That says a lot. And you know, Chantel is a shit stirrer too. Because did you see that part where she comes down the stairs, she goes outside, leaves Pedro inside, and she starts shit-talking him to her family. And then she tells her family, like, oh, no, don't tell Pedro what I said about him. Ugh. Even more, she says that she hopes this trip is going to be better because Pedro's family won't be around with their bad attitudes. Oh, okay. Your family, who is the worst family on TLC doesn't have an attitude problem. I hate you, Chantel. She even makes Pedro sit next to River in the very back seat. Why? You know why? Because she likes to make things worse in Pedro's life, because then she gets to be the victim, she gets to be in the middle, and she gets to have two sides, Pedro and her family, fighting over her. And what was with Mother Chantel being all mommy to Pedro in the car? Again, weird family, too close, blurred boundaries. She said she was going to pull the car over and make Pedro sit up front because she wanted him to play charades or something instead of listening to his headphones. Hey, idiota, he's being quiet. He's not causing an issue. He's keeping his cool. Why are you all trying to find a problem with every freaking thing he does? And by the way, I don't know anyone over the age of 8 and a half that would want to play road trip charades, especially with these sloths. Can you even imagine how long that game would last? Okay, well, they finally arrive at the cabin, and the place actually looks pretty fantastic. But family Chantel can't just have a good time. No, 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 no. They need to team up and corner Pedro alone outside. River goes in for the kill, saying that Pedro is disrespectful. But Pedro, very calmly and very accurately, recalls how they were disrespectful to his family back in the Dominican Republic. And then the stupid dad, Thomas, says,
"Yeah, but we moved on from that."
Oh, okay, Tommy. So it's all water under the bridge when you do something wrong, but not the other way around. Yeah, they are all stupid Americans. Yep, I said it, Mother Chantel. What are you gonna do about it? All right, moving on to Jorge and Anfisa. Well, George is still heartbroken and missing Anfisa. No change there, although his body and face are still shape-shifting. His hair, I think, just has a personality of its own, and I gotta think those continuity editors were probably just smashing their own damn phones trying to piece together this timeline because he looks different in every single scene. Now, after George does his laundry for the first time since probably his bottle of Febreze ran out, Anfisa finally agrees to meet with him for dinner. So once again, he's sporting a new facial hairstyle, which I can only describe as birth control. And Anfisa saunters in looking, I mean, there's no other way to say it. I mean, she looks like she has a slightly different face. But George doesn't notice because he is staring directly at her boobs for a long time, which was gross. Even Anfisa was bothered by it. Now, I have to talk about this little exchange between the producer and Anfisa during an interview. They ask Anfisa about this webcamming allegation, and Anfisa denies it. But somehow, I mean, she was able to get a car, an apartment, and whatever, however she got her money. Again, I've said it before, I don't really even give a shit. If she's paying her bills and it's all legal, I don't think any of us should care. But George looks shocked and jealous at this fact that Anfisa's taking care of herself. I think it's more than he can say for himself because he's still slumming it at the Crown Plaza. I think it was kind of a blow to his ego. But somehow, some way, George and his pubic beard convince Anfisa to take him back. And equally jaw-dropping was how Anfisa managed to keep that jacket perfectly hanging on her shoulders. I mean, she's got talent. You can't deny that. Okay, here we go. If you want to take a little nap, now would be a good time because it's time to talk about Russ and Paola. Paola's grandma's dying, and so am I, because Paola has her shoes off and she is laying on the airport floor under the chairs in the terminal. Do you even know the amount of feces and boogers where she is laying? I've said it once, I'll say it a million times. Hotel floors, which automatically groups airport floors in there. I shouldn't have to specify this. Any public place, floor is lava. Do not touch, move quickly, avoid cross-contamination. Russ, my condolences to you because Paola probably now has contracted typhoid, malaria, smallpox, and the bird flu. I mean, it's only a matter of time before that red hair starts falling out the roots. I'll probably give her 8 to 10 days before she's gone to that Bucaramanga city in the sky. Now, don't get me wrong, this situation with the grandma is sad, but Paula is acting like she's a victim, okay? Because she hasn't gone back to visit. That is completely on Paula. She has been the one flitting around Miami, paying for her photo shoots and her bad highlights. At no point over the past couple years did we ever hear about this ailing grandma. At no point did Paula ever think, oh, gee, maybe I should go back home and visit. No, she didn't. So, sorry, not sorry, pow. Now, there is this stupid, pre-planned ex-boyfriend showing up on his motorcycle. I do not believe for a second that Russ and Paula didn't know this guy was coming around. I think they are very calculated. I think these two plan every episode. They planned it together because they have no storyline. They need something, anything to keep them on the show. They're desperate. They don't have any other jobs, so they have to stir shit up, but it just doesn't translate. I think they're full of shit. Now, let's talk about Molly and Luis. Luis is sad because he has to do dish. Okay, America isn't all Molly bringing home the bra bucks and sending Kensley off to school to raise herself. But don't fear, Uncle Jesse and his hat from the Jackson 5 archives are here to save the day. He takes Luis out onto the deck of Dying Plants and Green Car Dreams and tells him that he needs to step up and be the man of the house. Now, I stopped here because I started struggling. I'm like, what is he talking about? Because I think Jesse's idea of man of the house and Luis's idea of man of the house are two very different things. I speak Jesse. I mean, you guys know how close we are. So I think what he means is he thinks Luis should step up, do what he has to do as a man, put your ego aside and get shit done, you know, like put yourself second. However, I think Luis thinks being the man of the house means being the stereotypical misogynist jerk. Now, what I didn't like that Jesse said, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, but there is something he said that I just can't quite shrug off. And that was that he said, you know that Molly needs a lot of help. We all know this means childcare. But let's just cut the shit. Isn't a nanny a hell of a lot cheaper than a mooching man, the visa green card process, and a legal divorce? Someone hook Molly up with care.com or care.com. Look out to Molly. She is your new sponsor poster girl. I think she does the teamy stuff. So send a little check on over to her. Now, fast forward to Molly trying to track down her daughter, Olivia. And I immediately became concerned because I love that girl. I was trying to say, you know, do they need all hands on deck? Do I need to take a flight down? But it's okay. We know where she's at. We just want her to come home. Now, Olivia has been at her boyfriend's house because she thinks Luis being there and Luis not doing all the housework or splitting it with her is unfair, that it's all going to fall on her shoulders otherwise. And Olivia's not coming home, so Molly doesn't know what to do. But I think she does know what to do. She just doesn't want to do it. And it is get rid of Luis immediately. So we got to fast forward a week here. You know how these episodes work. They're all over the place. So Olivia's been gone, like I said, for a week at the boyfriend's house. And Molly's taking her friend with her to basically try to kidnap Olivia back. But they end up talking in the doorway instead. And Molly is being accused of being selfish and just doing everything Luis wants to do. And you know what? I don't blame Olivia. I think she hit the nail on the motherfucking head. And Molly then walks away, leaves Olivia there because Olivia's still not ready to come home. And Molly breaks down in front of the camera saying, it's not going to work with Luis. Thank God. Molly, send his ass back immediately and we'll crowdsource if he will bring Chantel with him or bring Nicole or Annie back with him. Just all the sucky chicks, take them all. And that was a pun intended. Okay, now go grab yourself a sweet tea, Think of Uncle Jesse making it for you, stirring it up real nice. And after a quick break, let's talk about some Teen Mom too. Hey there, Mama. Yes, I'm talking to you, sitting there in yesterday's Old Navy compression pants that haven't seen an elliptical machine or treadmill in weeks. Okay, maybe never. Now, if you're a stay-at-home mom or full-time working mother, divorced, single, or the happiest wifey on the block, we've been there.
You could say we're the two friends who have been through the good, the bad, and ugly of life, relationships, dating, and motherhood. I'm Carrie from Sip and Shine Podcast.
And I'm Jody from Reality TV Podcast.
AKA your new best friends hailing from the East Coast.
And the Midwest.
We know what it's like for real moms and real women.
With a thirst for trashy TV, good books, a fast metabolism, Dateline with that silver fox, Mr. Morrison.
And some nice frosty cocktails when we're not on a diet. We vent and divulge the twists and turns that is being Moms on the Rocks.
Moms on the Rocks podcast, coming to your favorite podcast app in May. Ah, after a rough week last week with that fight that never really started nor ended at the reunion, we meet back up with our not teen moms anymore. Now let's start with Kale because she sucks and I just want to get her ass out of the way. And I mean that in a literal sense. It needs to be moved, out of state, out of her body, probably burned in the hospital lab where it was created and grown. This girl needs to back it up. Now Kale, as always, yells into the voiceover mic that she's back from LA, so she's ready to put all the drama with Brianna and Javi behind her, which should be easy because nothing can get past her huge silicone ass. But let's take in everything in this first scene because it was a lot. First, Joe. He's very tenderly holding baby No Name. And I know that his name is Lux, but, you know, Lux sucks and baby No Name sounds better to me. Now, who would have thought the artist formerly known as Rapper Joe would turn out to be such a normal dude with patience as long as Kale's underwear circumference. Now, second, Kale says this was the first reunion where she stayed calm, and producer JC and his earbuds agreed. Did I black out last week and dream it all? Did Brittany not threaten to rip Bones' Bam Bam ponytail off her head? If I'm wrong, I don't want to be right. But if Kale's behavior made her look like an adult and she was calm, then I must be 1 foot in the goddamn grave and delusional because she was nothing but a monster last week. You know what else are monsters? Hurricanes. I know, that was not good. It was not good, but there's no easy transition, you guys. Well, Joe and his family are doing a fundraiser for the victims in Puerto Rico of hurricanes. Oh, God, I know. All right, so Kale V and, we're going to put this in quotes, Kaylin's friend, Dom, arrive after a shopping trip. Oh, here go hell come. Now, Dom looks exactly, stay with me here, exactly like Kate McKinnon's impersonation of Jeff Sessions on SNL. Go and check my Instagram and Twitter for a side-by-side. It's gonna blow your mind. Now, long story short, Dom is Kale's girlfriend-ish. Kale is the only one that makes it weird. There's this weird joke about all of Kale's girlfriends being called daddy. It's weird and it's not that funny because how messed up is it to start referring to anyone as daddy when you can tell Kale has people in and out of her life as quickly as the weather changes and she's having her kids and even her other kids who are older hear people call themselves daddy? You're staying with me here because I know it's a lot. Now, Kale is the weird one about relationships. She loves creating this whole mystery and intrigue about who she is or isn't or might be dating. And she's done it before with other girls when she was dating them and with, Baby No Name's dad. Again, she's the only one that makes it weird. If you're gay, if you're straight, if you're somewhere in the middle, who the hell cares? Just own it and do your thing. But it's Kale, so that's never going to happen. So the whole episode hinges on, is she or isn't she with Dom? Again, I don't care. I just like looking at her Jeff Sessions face. Now let's talk about Brianna. I love watching this family on TV. We find the DeJesus Quince, come on, how good is that, in their apartment playing video games. I cannot stand playing video games, so I can't even comment because it would be like me talking or snarking about what it's like to be thin or not hungry. So I'm just going to fast forward to the scene at the nail salon, you know, where I can relate because, you know, I've never been to a nail salon that hasn't given me toenail typhoid. So here's my girl, Shirley, and she's talking to Brianna about where she stands with Javi. It seems like Brianna is digging Javi because he's a nice guy. No. That's no bueno. Javi's nice because he wants something. Nice guys like this, or we, again, in quotes, nice guys like this, can be the ones who end up having the craziest triggers. Now, I'm picturing people I know, so let me see if I can explain it. Think of the nice guys that you knew, let's say in high school, college, or just out of school, and you say something, make a comment about something really mundane, like, I don't like Toyotas. And all of a sudden, that nice guy turns into an asshole. Like, he likes to play devil's advocate. You know, like the guy in high school who played devil's advocate with your history teacher. I know you know what I'm talking about. You're probably thinking of the guy right now, like the one that debates whether heaven and hell exist or whether Area 51 actually exists. You with me here? The nice guys might be nice, but they're also fucking crazy. Now, in saying that, that was really nice of Javi to jump in the bounce house with Nova. I take all my comments about Toyotas and Area 51 back. Now, I did think it was a little too much or too hot too soon. I'm more with Roxanne. You guys live far apart. It's going to be really messy if this thing doesn't work out because you're forced to go all in way too early. And those red flags really came out during that dinner date. As soon as Javi said he found her attractive because she was doing the mom thing all on her own, it was like curtain call, lights on, everything became clear. Javi, okay, screw the nice guy theory. All right, let's just push that to the side. Javi wants to be the knight in shining armor. He wants the praise and adulation for being the good guy, that he's going to swoop in. He wants the head pats. He's going to be the savior. But that's going to turn into him not feeling appreciated and needing constant attention as time goes on. Brianna would be the second single mom he's pursued, and something is up with that. And that's nothing against you single moms, right? It's something about why is Javi so attracted and drawn to single moms? Like, what is it that he needs from them? Well, I guess it's time to check in with Chelsea. Guess what? Chelsea wants baby kisses, and Cole is wearing a star-spangled hat again. And they want to have another baby, so she's going to stop birth control. Write that down, you guys, just in case you didn't know how that works. We got a good 10-minute segment explaining it. Now, we also saw that Chelsea went to her lawyer for the name change visitation, and she also drinks Starbucks skinny vanilla lattes with almond milk. Yeah, they had to leave in her drive-thru order because they have that little usable footage. Get her off the motherfucking show. Janelle, or should we say Barbara, because we start out seeing Barbara and Jace having a nice chilly picnic with a smushed pizza and caffeine. Now, I don't really like picnics at all, to be honest, but this one was one of the most depressing I've ever seen. It's so sad that even the happy moments are just gray and stained with tomato paste for Jace. Meanwhile, our mother of the year, Janelle, tells us that she's still pissed at Nathan and Barbara. No, you don't say. She's in a parking lot talking on the phone to David, and she says that she just met with Jace's therapist to see how all this fighting is affecting Jace. Yeah, not at all to try to manipulate the therapist into ratting out Barbara for something. We're on to you, Janelle. Well, Janelle, the therapist is smarter than you, which is why she said you need to bond with your son. But Janelle relays the conversation to David through the Janelle filter, which means Janelle heard what she wanted to hear, and she's only saying what will not get her in trouble with David. A picture of mental stability, right? Now, I didn't even need to tell you that, of course, because her wonky eyebrows gave it away before she even opened her mouth. And then, later that night, Janelle is recorded calling 911, saying that Jace called her, saying that Barbara was yelling at him and hitting him. Now, here's the thing. This is really serious shit, like a kid claiming that they're getting beaten. But immediately, as always, the alarm bells are going off with Janelle's story. Because on that call, Janelle sounded very, very calm. If my child or my nieces or nephews or any of your children were to call me and they were crying in a panic saying that they were being hit, I would be in my car immediately, frantically driving there and calling 911. I wouldn't just be on a call calmly describing a previous phone call and, oh, yeah, I'll just wait for an update. Thank you. No. Now, the next morning, Janelle is at breakfast, again, still very calm, and she's with David and her favorite kid, Ensley, and she says that Jace ended up telling the truth to the police that Barbara didn't really hit him. Again, this is some really dark, disturbing shit. I think, okay, I'm not a mental health professional. In my humble opinion, a kid that has the potential to lie and create a scene like that, or that Janelle is using Jace to create a scene, it's just so messed up. The therapist was just telling Janelle to cool it with that move in with me, Jace stuff. And here's Janelle 24 hours later at this breakfast saying that she's going to get Jace back and she's going to take Barbara to court. Ugh. Now, finally, we meet up with Barbara to hear her side of the story. So, what happened? Well, you know, Janelle, it's always going to be a really epic story when it starts with a, well, you know, Janelle. And epic it was. So apparently what happened was Jace came home from a therapy appointment and had a meltdown. I can see that. A kid's really raw. You're just going through all these emotions. So he comes home, has a meltdown. Sounds like they happen pretty often. He ends up putting a hole through the wall and he threw a toy at Barbara's head and then went into a closet and called Janelle to say Barbara was hitting him. Wow. I mean, I always say this. I know Barbara is not perfect. Again, I mean, she raised Janelle, but I do believe that Barbara is sincere in wanting to do what's best for Jace. And she hit the nail on the head when she said that Janelle's purpose and her goal is working to tear Jace apart down the middle between them instead of working together to make him feel whole. That therapist and Barbara know the odds are stacked against this kid, but at least Barbara is trying and Janelle is just fucking it all up. Now let's talk about Leah. You know, I always save my favorite West Virginia highway pit stop, aka Leah's go-to place for meeting up with her various baby daddies for last, because talking about Leah and the girls is my reward at the end of a long episode of having to listen to Chelsea and Cole baby talk. But it's not just Leah we get to see this week. Jeremy is there too. Gasp. Now, Leah says Jeremy is in town and wants to spend time with Addie. So she and her best icy blonde extensions are going to go pick up Addie. Leah sucks at flirting, okay? And if I am saying that, you know it's bad. But if you're a mom of three and you're using butt jokes to try to snag your ex-husband, you're doing it wrong. Am I right, West Virginia? Let's talk about the scene with Leah and her new friend. Now, blah, blah, blah. She recaps how the reunion made her feel weird because the fight between Bree and Kel. But what I was pissed about was the pumpkin she was filling with treats and toys for trick-or-treating. Now, either Leah doesn't understand how trick-or-treating works, which is highly likely, or She is that asshole mom that ruins it for the rest of us. Am I going to have to do freaking Halloween buckets like Easter baskets now? Okay, parents, scurry your little girls is out, okay, if they're listening. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I already got sucked into doing the freaking leprechaun thing on St. Patrick's Day, and we don't even have a drop of Irish blood in us. I have DNA profiles to prove it. And let's not get started on that asshole on the shelf. We got the fairies and the snowman poop and all this other magical shit. Parents, what the hell is happening? It's got to stop. I remember one magical thing in my childhood. When my mom got me a Coke float from McDonald's because they had that promotion where you could get like the actual glass. It was probably maybe like 88, 89. And I thought that thing was the best thing I'd ever received because it was a $2 upgrade. After my three siblings and I shared that Coke float because, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, that glass was the reminder that my mom loved us enough to spend 50 extra cents on each of us. I know I had a point to the story somewhere. I don't know exactly where it's going, but I know that it means the Leahs of this world are making it impossible for the rest of us to be normal. Leah is making all the children in the U.S. brats, but I say no, not mine. I'm getting back on track here. My children are not getting Halloween buckets. I'm putting my foot down. They're going to go trick-or-treating in the rain, the sleet, the snow, until they can't walk in their slipping down tights anymore. And that is what Halloween is all about. God bless America. So, yeah, I've pulled the train in the station. We're here, and it's the big day. It's Halloween, and because Leah is more concerned with doing makeup on her kids, Addie is chasing a producer and biting him, like gripped down. He's dragging her through as she's biting him, like a rabid dog that won't let go. And then the one that looks like Leah and acts like a terrorist pushes down our alley. And Leah has zero control over her kids, and she doesn't even know how to reprimand them. So instead, she tells whatever the hell her name, Aaliyah, Gracie, whatever. She grabs her. She calls Corey to tell Grace to act better. Now, that one is going to be a Janelle if they don't put a stop to this shit now. Or, I've said it before, the offer always stands. Send that little girl over to me for the afternoon, and trust me, that kid will be straightened out because I do not play around. I don't fall for the cutesy smarmy stuff. I'll happily take Allie though because she looked so damn cute in that male costume and her glasses. I mean, you guys, group sigh. Adorable. Well, I think that about does it for my rant and America's Next Top Teen Offspring. So let's bring it all to a close here. Remember to subscribe, leave a 5-star review on iTunes because that's how more people find me, you guys. Really helps me out, helps me stay motivated to make fun of people for you so you can feel better about yourself while I fall asleep with all the guilt on my shoulders. Just kidding. Fuck off, Evelyn. All right, come talk to me at RealityVPod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And until next week, stay salty.